Power of our diplomacy.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's a really big deal.
The strength of our diplomacy.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
One. Deadline.
This is episode 12, a family-friendly, clean, fun for the whole family. You got anything else?
Just like, it's going to be a chock-a-block full of, you know, verbal ejaculations.
Oh, man. It got kind of dirty.
I'm sorry.
I haven't said the name of our show yet. Maybe I shouldn't. Welcome to another episode of Diplomacy Cast. There, I did it. Diplomacy Cast is a podcast about the board game Diplomacy. I am Eric Mead.
And I'm Nathan Barnes, also known as Chicken and Waffle Barnes in certain parts of the country.
You just made that up right now.
No, I did not.
Instant. Nobody knows you as Chicken and Waffle Barnes.
Yes, they do.
In today's episode, we're going to start off with something, a couple things that are hot off of various presses.
Yeah, people don't use the press anymore.
Well, if they did, it would be extremely
It would
hot.
Be really warm.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then we're going to move on to a Power Plays segment where we will attempt to discuss the anatomy of a solo.
Yeah, we're going to really dissect it. It's going to be
A little bit, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have a guest on, and we're going to talk about stuff. It's going to be good. It's
really?
Yeah.
We're talking about stuff. His name is Mark Ward. And he is a...
He's a guy online. He's played at a couple tournaments. Came out to WAC 1 year. He's a good guy.
Those of you who play online probably recognize the name.
It's true.
If you have any questions, any feedback, please email us at press@diplomacycast.com. And be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes.
Hot off the press.
Yeah,
people don't use the press anymore.
Drop it like it's hot.
Oh, so if we just dropped it like it was hot...
If we just dropped it like it was hot, you can do better than that. Drop it like it's hot. Off the press.
I'm not saying that.
Right, cool. We actually don't have any new emails hot off the press today, but we were so excited about our new intro that you just heard that we thought we'd just call this segment hot off the press.
Yeah, I guess that's a little duplicitous, actually, but I have some things I want to talk about because I'm very excited about WACON 2012, which is coming up in just... a little while, January 27th through the 29th, here in the lovely rainy Seattle, Washington, at the luxurious Washington Athletic Club, WAC, which is where the name comes from. And it's going to shape it up pretty well.
The cynic among you may think that this entire podcast endeavor that Nathan and I have engaged in has actually just been an extended infomercial for WAC. You're not entirely wrong. I'm comfortable with that label because you really should come to WAC because
you really should.
Is that much fun.
But it also, I didn't really think about it that way when I was recording the episodes. So I'm going to go ahead and say it's not really about that, especially since I didn't have the dates a month ago. So
yeah,
but it's shaping up really well. We have over 4 boards now, and with 2 months to go at the time of this recording, so. I'm thinking we'll have 5 boards at least, hopefully, crossing my fingers. We might get 6, but, you know, that's really going to depend on the amount of support we get from, locals, from people traveling all over, from all over the country. We got people from, you know, as far away from New York and Texas and, Canada all coming down, and we're trying to get some Europeans.
Well, Nathan, that does sound like fun. How much does this cost?
Jesus, really?
I would pay $99 to go to WAC.
Well, you know, honestly, guys and gals out there, if I could edit him out when he does stuff like that, I really would. But I don't have the technology. Yeah, no, it's actually, you're right. No, thank you for prompting me. It's only $20 actually this year, and we pay for food. If you're coming in from out of town or too far away. You know, there's a shared suite where people are just going to like roll out their sleeping bags, get a rollaway bed.
Diplomacy slumber party.
It's a diplomacy slumber party, and it's really a lot of fun.
Bring your bunny slippers and your...
Or not.
Yeah.
Or if you want, you know, whatever. No judging. Yeah,
it's fine. But it's, everyone else probably will. I'm
seriously, we're very excited about it. It's been a couple of years since we've had really what I like to think of as the traditional WAC, where we have sort of like the whole thing. You know, it's not, we're not doing a scaled back version. We're going all out, and it's really quite nice. So I really hope everyone has a chance to at least consider it. If you want to, like, we're on Facebook. You can, the information's on the Diplomacy Cast website. If you have any questions about it, you can email diplomacycast, press at diplomacycast.com, or you can email either one of us, or you can find the information, because I have spammed the diplomacy world.
Prizes will include a trophy for first place, a trophy for Eric Mead place, and trophies for third through seventh place.
God, Captain Bitter, so what? You've gotten second so many times. One of these
best
days
countries.
You will be... Yeah, best countries. And I don't know, like, just so everybody knows, if you're interested, the scoring system will be sum of squares. A lot of people care about that. But that's the reason we chose that, is it's going to be the same system that they're using at WDC, World Diplomacy Championships, in Chicago next year. We like to give people a little test drive. And last but not least, and I feel after this is our eighth one, and I've been doing it 9 years now.
Eighth.
Yeah, it's the eighth. It's the eighth official one. We've had some. Yeah. We've had some not. We didn't consider them officials. So the one thing I do have to say, because some people out there really are concerned about it, the trophies at WAC are an entirely me sort of thing, and every year I come up with a new and interesting take on what a trophy is. We've done t-shirts, I made books 1 year that opened up to have a secret, like, compartment in it. I've done, like, silver platters. I've done all sorts of crazy crap, and I can't wait to figure out what it is I'm going to do this year.
This year, to commemorate episode 12, sex toys.
Ooh, that's a good idea. Those are expensive, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing. I would have to go used.
Maybe,
yeah. There's a market. There is, like, on Craigslist or something.
I hope that's not true.
I don't actually know.
Moving on. No, you don't? I'm sorry.
No, I'm good. No, okay. I do want to encourage people, and please, if you have questions, just hit us up. It's going to be a really good time, and frankly, there's not another diplomacy tournament
this
coast until... late spring, early summer, at least. So
yep.
If you're on the West Coast, it's worth a trip.
Really, I'm going to be hugely disappointed if our entire listenership isn't there. I'm just saying.
Wow, Eric just threw down a gauntlet.
Yeah, a little bit.
Wow.
What's your excuse, people?
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah, so,
and if you don't want to come as a paid member, you could always come and occupy WAC.
That's, you know, that's very hip right now.
Yeah,
you can come and occupy WAC. We would totally, totally allow you to do that. I mean, we would probably pepper spray you, but
a little bit.
Yeah.
We'll let Andy Bartoloni do the pepper spray.
Yeah, he's in charge of that.
I think it's fun.
Indeed.
Moving on.
Moving on.
We have another new exciting innovation.
We do!
Also hot off of an
electronic press!
That's what I'm talking about. And very pertinent to this communication idea.
Oh, that's good.
We have one of these Facebook things now.
Yeah, I love how, like, 2005 you are about this.
Okay.
Eric, just so everyone knows, full disclosure, Eric does not like social media. I think he has a Friendster. I think that's all he has.
I probably do have a Friendster.
He does not have a Facebook, refuses to have a Facebook. Wait, so all of this is very, like, he's like an old man. He's like, I don't know how all this works. I don't know what to do.
It's true. So for purposes of this segment, I'm going to say, what can we do with this amazing piece of awesome technology?
Right.
And you're going to tell me.
I
know.
But it's a Facebook page, obviously, for those of you that are Facebook savvy. I'm sure there's a bunch of you out there.
Which is all of you.
No, I'm sure there's a bunch of people out there that listen and that are not on Facebook right now. I mean, there's a lot of people that opt out. Like, I know people that listen to this podcast that aren't on Facebook. They have been on Facebook and left.
You know what? Eddie Bresson has a Facebook. I'm the only one who doesn't now.
That's not true. That is not true. I know people. So, but the great thing that what I'm hoping what you can do with this, you know, it's a great way to get, not only give us feedback that's simple and easy, because, you know, most of you guys are on Facebook every day anyway, but also if you want to set something up, if you want to, like, create some sort of, you know, you just don't know where to start, and you're like, you're picking a random place, you know, Iowa, you're like, I want to just throw something out there. This is a great place to just say, hey, I'm in Iowa. Who else is listening? Can we get together? Because I think right now the biggest problem is, hey, I'm not really sure what to do to put together a, you know, local house game. And Facebook is one of many great ways to make that happen. And we have our own little, you know, homebrewed community here. So, highly encourage you guys to give us feedback there and just, like, you know, blow up the page. Upload pictures of games you played, you know, like, hey, this is my house game I did. Like, let's put something together, and I think it'd be going to be really, really good.
Yeah, I know we said something similar for our email box, and our email box is still alive and kicking, and we want you to use it to write us about the show.
Sure.
I was just pretty poor at actually being able to do all of the follow-through of getting an email from one person saying, hey, that I'm trying to reach out and find more people, where should I look, etc.
Right.
I think this is going to be easier because I think everybody is going to be able to kind of see each other
right.
on this.
And when you put something on the page and no one answers, it's a lot easier for everybody to go, man, wow, those guys, they're not on the ball. So we're going to be on the ball on this.
Yeah, we're kind of forced to be. One thing I was thinking is if you're playing online somewhere and you want other people to come play online at the same place, come let us know that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that would be great for us to know. Like, we need to be on top of this stuff.
I would be thrilled if people started throwing together, you know, Diplomacy Cast inspired,
right.
branded online games. You know,
like branded.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no. But it's nice, you know. We all listen to Diplomacy Cast. We're all going to try these, you know, harebrained ideas that these two jackasses sort of gave to us.
Yeah,
and that would just be really fun. So
it's just sort of a platform for you guys to meet each other and us to meet you. We're still looking for guests. I'll put it that way.
Sure. Yeah.
We're looking for some people to interview in different aspects of the hobby than just, you know, our friends in the tournament scene.
Right. We have a lot of those. We can like haul those guys out till the end of time.
Yeah. Fact is, if you're enjoying us continuing to talk to our friends in the tournament scene there, we have talked to a lot of really great players of this game, and we'll happily, there's 20 more just like him, and we'll bring out, the same ones again, if that's what you're enjoying. But if you feel like you're not hearing from the people that you want to be hearing from on subjects that you want to be hearing about,
yeah,
this is your chance.
Yeah, like, put it up there for the public to see, you know?
If it's you, all you need is a Skype, and we'll interview you if you think you have something interesting to say.
I mean, of course, we have a rigorous
process of screening.
Yeah. So yeah. We don't accept psychopaths.
No.
Sociopaths, fine.
But psychopaths.
Well, they're playing Diplomacy, man.
Yeah.
They gotta be a little...
That's a good point.
You know what I'm saying? So anyway, Facebook... Try and find us out. Just Diplomacy Cast. Just type it into the search bar on Facebook. We'll pop up. Like us. Keep in touch and let us know what's going
on. Like us?
Yes, it's a Facebook thing. Trust me.
Okay. Is that the same as friend us?
It's not Friendster, dude.
So you don't actually friend people?
It's a page.
Oh. All right.
I feel like you've been in a coma. And I'm coaching you through life. It's really sad.
Have you ever seen that movie Memento?
Yeah, it's like
I sustained that accident.
That's what it's like for me.
All right, our next segment is hot off the presses. Wait,
have we done this already? No, but our next segment is.
Have I told you about my condition?
I really hope you guys have seen that movie. Otherwise, this is the worst inside joke ever.
Yeah.
So, next segment, you know what we're going to talk about today? And we mentioned it already once again, but we... Eric is just shaking his head at me because he can't let this joke go. We're going to talk about solo, like the anatomy of the solo. We're going to like peel back the layers of the solo
yeah.
and really, really figure out, plumb the depths. Why? And we're going
to
answer the question. What's the question?
A little adult themed again, actually.
What's the question?
I lost my train of thought.
The question is, how does anyone ever solo?
Why does anyone ever solo? Even better.
All right, you're right. The how is a little bit too logistical. You're right.
After this, power plays.
Power plays.
Power plays.
Power plays.
So this all started, as I recall, by someone actually emailed it, posed this question to us.
Yeah, a couple of people have put it in various forms.
Right.
There was one person, and it's escaping me right now, who did it specifically, who just said it in so many words. Why does anybody ever solo? How does the board not just get together
right.
and put a stop to it
stop
before
clear,
it ever happens?
Right?
It seems like that should be the inevitable consequence of this game, and every game should
and
draw.
And, you know, the best thing about this question is that person is totally right.
Oh, sure, yeah. And that question actually sort of tickled me because I can remember a while ago being, you know, when I was sort of playing a lot online and hadn't really gotten into the tournament scene yet, thinking that exact same thing, and it just driving me crazy, like knowing that I'd seen solos, knowing that I'd soloed, knowing that I'd been soloed on, but every time just being like, that never should have happened.
Yeah, how on earth did you allow that to happen?
Isn't this just sort of a flaw in the game that you just really, frankly, can't solo? Shouldn't it be anyway? I mean, if we take sort of the anatomy of your average game of diplomacy, you start with your two theaters, right? And this is gross generalization, but it's an important gross generalization. Sure. You start with your two theaters. In the West, you usually get a 2-on-1. In the East, you probably get a 3-on-1.
Yeah.
To start with. This eventually leads to the death of two powers. Now you're left with 5. Somehow there's shakeups in that structure one way or another, and usually you lose two more in the mid game.
You end up
then you're left
three.
With three.
Yeah.
Three-way draws are a pretty common outcome to a diplomacy game. It stands to reason that that's sort of the Darwinist process that happens. Every once in a while something goes wrong and you get a four-way or something like that. If the timing wasn't quite right to get your three-way. You can't get a two-way because two ways are 17-17 and that's just crazy business. Right?
Right.
But somebody getting 18? There's no way.
Well, and I think one of the reasons, and I just want to just to take a slight step back to give us a little bit of background and a little bit of perspective, just so everyone knows, you know, there's so much and you know, so many scoring systems that really incent a solo because, you know, there's a philosophy and there's it's interesting that there's these overriding belief systems on top of all this, this layering of like, well, the rules say you got to get to 18. Mm-hmm. So a lot of scoring systems, especially in the past and a little bit more still today, really heavily weight that solo.
Yep.
Because you want to...
Some more than others.
Definitely some more than others. Yep. Because there's some that want to like look at, well, because you get down to this thing where, you know, if three round tournament, let's say your vanilla tournament, there's three rounds. If one person solos one of those rounds and loses the other two, there's a question, should that person do better than someone that gets a three-way draw in three rounds, right?
Yeah.
So you tend to have systems that contemplate that scenario and go, ooh, well, we have to wait the solo so much so that we can really like balance it out.
And everyone has an opinion on that.
Absolutely.
I think most people feel that the solo and two eliminations still ought to be better.
Yeah, I think that is true.
Because otherwise you get people who just set out looking for the three-way draw.
Right.
And that's not what we try to encourage. But
right.
there are disagreements. I feel like the people who disagree with that are sort of fitting out a little bit.
There's
less of a voice for that than there used to be. I think most people agree that the object of the game is solos, and so we wouldn't ever want to encourage somebody to play overly conservatively.
Right.
You know, that we want to encourage everyone to do that.
And these scoring systems, they sort of embody these philosophies that are sort of driving things. And, you know, when you're entering into the tournament scene, or if you're online or any sort of scoring system, sort of influences your beliefs about things. And it sort of gets us to this question. Like, once you look at what the rules of the game are and then how your play is rewarded, you go, how and why does anyone ever solo?
Yeah, and by the way, on one last little point on that scoring system thing, something that people sometimes don't notice in scoring systems is that usually getting soloed on, there's a huge punishment for that in most scoring systems.
Right.
That's something that people don't even pay enough attention to, but if they did, you'd think it would be even rarer.
Right, because if you lose to a solo, you actually lose more points overall. You don't get any survival.
Like
sometimes there's a survival sort of like, oh, you soloed, but you had five centers.
Yeah.
You got in a draw and you had five centers, or you weren't in a draw, but you weren't, you know, there was no solo and you weren't eliminated. So you get something. You get like pocket change.
An old fashioned approach to the game used to be, if you came in second to a solo, that was still not necessarily bad. But that's really fallen out of favor, and we don't see
much
anymore.
Oh, yeah, that's like the 70s, 80s.
You still find people every once in a while who sort of like came up feeling that way, like believing that, like, well, if my ally solos, that's the next best thing to soloing yourself. But those people are not as common anymore.
Right, but that's exactly why I wanted to bring up the scoring system background, yeah, because that really influences behavior.
Yeah.
If you are rewarding a second place to a solo via a scoring system, people start to think, oh, well, that's okay then. It's a norm.
And more games start ending in solos for that reason.
Exactly.
But the point is, all of what we've just laid out now, it seems to be indicating that soloing should be incredibly difficult.
Right. In the current, especially in the last 20 years.
Yeah. And to be fair, it is kind of difficult. Uh-huh. I mean, tournaments, depending on the size of the tournament and depending on just sort of fluky random chance who's there, right, differentials that, you know, do tend to have five or less. Is that a fair...
Five or less solos?
Yeah.
Over the course of a weekend?
Yeah. Three or less?
I think, like, a solo is an event. Like, if you get...
I feel like most tournaments have one or two, at least.
Do you?
Yeah. Except really small ones.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah.
I think if there's more than two or three solos, they're like, people start, like, perking up, like, oh, wow, golly.
But it seems...
Like,
well,
when we were in Chicago, there was only two.
There was only one,
There only one? I thought there was two.
There might have been two.
Well, I don't know. I don't remember that well.
Yeah.
But there was very few, and that was a fairly decent-sized tournament.
Yeah, it was.
Good players, too.
Definitely. And not a ton of soloing. But, you know, they happen. I think WAX, we've had, you know, three, four, a couple of WAX.
It depended on the scoring system.
it does depend a lot on that. But point being...
We can get away from that. I just wonder.
They're rare. They're rare. I've played in online tournaments. They're rare there, too.
Oh, absolutely.
So now, why are they so rare, / why does anybody ever solo at all?
And what I was, Eric and I, we sat down and, like, really sort of sketched out what we wanted to talk about. I'll have him correct me if I'm wrong. I think we came up with two or three main categories of solos, of the whys.
Yeah.
So why this happens, first, there's a whole group of solos that happen because... people get really angry.
Well, you know what? Before we even go there, let's start with the one where you just force it.
Oh, okay, yeah, you're
right. You know what? I think is the one when our emailer wrote us, and when newer, and not that our emailer was a newer player, I don't think that he was, but when newer players start pondering this question for the first time, I think what they imagine a solo to be is one where you just kick everybody's butt.
Yeah.
You know, like you...
That
you
glorious,
just,
you have like a suit of armor and a sword, and you're just winning.
You just do that much better than everybody else, that you somehow just knock them all around, and they can't help it, and the next thing they know, you've got 18 centers.
Those are like unicorns.
Yeah.
You know, they're... Like, the only one that I can think of actually has a name that people refer to it as... They called it the Immaculate Concession. Like, he didn't even get to 18, right?
He just convinced them.
I mean, it was ridiculous. I don't even want to, without getting into the details, it was, like, ridiculous how this person had totally dominated the game.
Yeah. And of course, why is it that should be so difficult? The answer is because at some point during those total dominations, you'll get big enough that the rest of the board will respond to it.
Right.
They'll go, uh-oh.
Whoops.
This guy is five bigger than anybody else on the board. We should probably stop what we're doing and deal with that.
Yeah. Nine times out of ten, they do.
And that's what's, you know, that's what would beg the question, how does anybody solo then?
Right.
You know?
So I said we'll go through the categories as we go along instead of just enumerating them. So there's this, we'll call it the unicorn solo.
Sure.
That one, don't expect, I mean, the first thing you should think about is like, okay, that's almost never going to happen. Because those happen either on just incredibly fluky set of circumstances or, you know, you just happen to be on a board. Like sometimes you'll go to a tournament or you'll be playing on a game where you just happen to be just... amazingly, amazingly better than everybody else.
Yeah.
That happens. Like, you have a bunch of, like, six noobs on the board who've never played the game before that are just learning, or they just do it. You know, that can happen.
And it doesn't even take all six, actually. There can be a poor, hapless other, like, one or two good players sort of isolated on that board who don't know what they're doing, but, like, enough noobs around you that you can just run over them.
Or just,
and like, those guys can't organize any sort of a competent defense to it. But,
or you're good enough that you just rally them to your victory and they don't realize what's happening.
Sure, sure. But when we say new, we mean really, really new. You know,
as in, like, never played the game before.
Legitimately incompetent to not even have the, like, warning sign, to not even be like, oh, that guy's getting too big.
Right.
And so new that if there's another person on the table that's not as new, and who's trying to point that out to them, they don't care. You know, they have to just be like, oh, well, that's doesn't seem like that big a deal to me.
Right.
They're like, doesn't seem like that big a deal. He's at 14. Yeah, well, doesn't he have to get to 18?
You know? That's four more. I got plenty of time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, and sometimes that'll happen. And honestly, I think without drifting too far from our, like, ticking off the different types of solos thing, I think that as a general rule, the bigger the skill differential there is on a board, the likelier a solo is.
Oh, yeah. You can probably come up with some sort of equation.
I just did.
Wow.
Yeah. How you like me now?
No, and I think that I couldn't agree with you more on that one. Like, when you have that huge disparity, like, things just happen. Like, I've absolutely played in house games where it's just like, whoops, and no one knows what they're doing, and blah, blah, blah.
And somebody just falls into the solo. And honestly, it's not always even the best player. I've seen games where, like, there's a couple of good players and the good players get mad at each other, and there's some totally new player who nobody thinks is a threat, and he's just like, oh, hey, this is fun. Oh, I just took three more.
It's great for that guy. Congratulations. Yeah. Glad you soloed. Like, but I think what we want to stress really is that particular thing. If you sit down at a table, the first thing, and you've heard me say this before, you should always assume, unless you absolutely know that these people have never played a game before, but you should always assume that your opponents are competent.
Okay.
That's how you should play the game. And in that scenario, if they're competent players, there should not be a solo.
Right.
If there's seven robots sitting at the table,
won't be.
Well, of course there won't be.
Right.
I'm just saying, in a vacuum, like, if everyone played emotionlessly, and they had no, like, personal stake in it, and they all just sort of, like, did things completely rationally, you'd never see a solo.
Yep.
But that brings us to the next category.
Well, right. So solos happen because of emotion.
Right. Absolutely.
And there's a few different categories of that emotion.
Right.
I mean, where do you want to start? Do you want to start with the throne solo, basically?
I think we can start there.
I would say probably the most common solo.
I would.
And this requires that step back for some people, where some people are just like, well, rationally speaking, there should never be a solo. And a lot of people play this game with the rational part of their mind. And a lot of people don't understand the part about the game where emotion comes into it. And so the first time they get soloed on because of something like this, they don't get it.
No, they don't get it.
But it happens all the time. And the reason that it happens all the time, hey, diplomacy players out there, you play a very emotional game. You play a game that involves interpersonal relationships. It involves basically trying to get people to like you in a game situation.
And in order to do that, you're sort of being a little bit vulnerable emotionally and trust people. You give out that little bit, and then when you're betrayed, you get angry.
Yeah, if you're counting on just other people seeing the common sense of your plan, the logic of and genius of your plan in order to get you by in this game, you're missing out on part of the game of diplomacy. You really will, and you'll be confused again and again and again about why people keep acting irrationally around you. One of the irrational things that people do that I see really overly logic-driven players go pull their hair out about is they throw solos when they get mad. And it's a huge part of the game. It's a mammoth part. And
it is. It's quite, yeah. Not that it always works.
Right.
Like, because you often find that people are, you know, they're able to stop it because there's five other players.
Well, hold that thought for a second because I'm going to pull this back. But for now, let's start with sometimes. All right, let's a pretty simple example of it. You're I'm thinking of a game very early on in my tournament playing days. And it's only illustrative as a point. There was a very good player in the West, and I think he was playing England, might have been Germany. He very much dominated the West. He beat the heck out of the West. Meanwhile, us guys in the East, I think it was Russia, were just goofing around, fighting each other, stabbing, unstabbing, restabbing, unstabbing. The next thing we know, this German, I think it was Germany, next thing we know, this German's up to, you know, 14-15. He's completely crushed both of his Western opponents, and he's starting to kind of look our direction. As he's coming toward us, at the same time, he's going to each of us individually and trying to convince us, hey, you know, let's say the three of us that are left are Austria, Turkey, and Russia. He's going to Austria, Turkey, and saying, eh, let's have a three-way. You can cut out Russia. He's going to Russia. He's saying, eh, let's have a three-way. You can cut out Turkey. He's going to, you know, trying every combination of that to see if there's anybody who's willing to not put up an organized defense against this guy who's obviously coming, right? I think I was the Russia, and I think he actually got the Austria and the Turkey to go, oh, yeah, we could probably take Russia out, and it'd be totally fine. This was the point at which I lost my temper, because I made up my mind that, well, I was going to lose either way, right? Mm-hmm. Either these guys were going to cut me out and have a three-way, or I was going to lose to a solo. I would much rather lose to a solo at this point.
Because you wanted to punish them.
Because I don't want these guys to be cutting me out of the draw. I think it's, I think it's cheap and dirty, and what they really should be doing is, like, trying to get a four-way to stop this guy that's, like, much huger.
Well, and what you're saying, really saying, is the rational thing to do is to not let that guy win.
Right.
Because it's worse off for everyone
right.
if you let that guy win.
But then, given that I had no good rational choice to make, because they're trying to cut me out either way, I made an emotional choice.
Right.
And my emotional choice was, well, what the hell, I'll lose to a solo. And that's exactly what I did. I just pulled it all off the line, and the guy soloed, and congratulations to him.
Right.
He did what he was supposed to do there. He made sure that we were all madder at each other than him.
And that's really the essence of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, from an advice standpoint, your job, if you're trying to solo in this way, is to be ahead of a lot of this emotional stuff and really try and make sure that your opponents are, or at least the right people, are more pissed off at other people mm-hmm. than you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, you're always the good guy.
Sometimes you don't even need to do anything. I can think of a lot of times where, a lot of times, where somebody on the other side of the board has just come to me and they're so mad at their neighbors that they're just like, just come take my dots.
Right.
Just because they want to punish someone. Like, they've lost all interest in their game at that point. They want to punish someone. I don't, you know, like, I've literally had this conversation. Come take my dots. Oh, come on, man. You don't need to do that. Come on, stand up for yourself. No, I'm serious. Take my dots. Are you sure? I mean, I will if you really want me to. No, take them. I've had that conversation multiple times.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And it completely perplexes certain players, you know, right. Like their neighbors on the other side who don't understand how angry that they've made the guy.
No, they
to cause him to do that. That can break games. And you're right. If the guy was rational, the guy would probably just settle down and go, oh, okay, I'd better work with you now to
right.
stop this much larger player. But he's not.
Right.
And you can't expect him to be. He's mad. You
right,
know?
Because, you know, his so-called allies have really, you know, thrown him out to pasture and have decided that the four dots that they can maybe get off of him
mm-hmm.
is worth more than the so-called... I mean, like, that's the balancing act that they're doing. They're thinking, well, we can still stop this solo threat
yep.
if we take this person out.
Yep.
And I think... people really they often underestimate what can happen if that player just turns and becomes essentially a part of this, you know, that solo threat goes from, like, you know, 14
Ooh, yeah.
to 18 in like a hiccup. It's like,
yeah.
boom.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's really, especially in the right hands. And I've seen a lot of guys just say, you know what? Let me show you how this is done. I can think of a number of players who actually
sure.
specialize in, and they make a reputation for themselves that say, if you're going to screw with me, at a certain point, I am going to make sure someone else solos.
I consider myself one of those players.
Yeah. And they do it over and over and over and over again, and people know
yeah.
you know, this is what I do. This is my shtick.
Yeah.
And so you want to get to know people like Eric.
Yeah.
You don't want to take him out really early. He might be useful later.
Or if you do, make sure you get them all.
Right.
You get them all while I'm not looking, because I will use my last one or two to just make you miserable and, like, make some third guy huge, just because I don't like getting stabbed.
I don't like to lose.
Now, I told you, I promised that I was going to flip this around, and I'm going to take a brief aside here, and I'm going to flip this around for a second. This having a tantrum thing, this ceasing to care about your own well-being and just wanting to punish somebody thing, it actually can be a gambit a little bit. It doesn't actually have to be an absolute declaration of suicide every time.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you do. You know exactly what I'm talking about. What happens is you're in some spot where you need somebody's help.
Yep.
And everybody seems to, nobody seems interested in particularly helping you. They've all just sort of agreed on, well, you've got three left. I get one, Bob gets one, and Joe gets one. Right?
Right.
If you can convincingly, compellingly, loudly, and enthusiastically enough go, Joe gets all three, I'm going to make it happen that way. Sometimes Joe's going to work with you at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes Joe understands that you've completely lost the will to live and all you want to do is help him and hurt them.
Yep.
Sometimes the next thing you know, you've got an ally. And sometimes that ally gets a little distracted doing other things after a year or two of this. And hey, you were at three. Wow, now you're at four.
Now you're at five.
Yeah. This is a legitimate comeback thing. So,
right.
So those suicidal urges that people have and those suicidal urges that you might have don't actually need to be suicide in game terms. I mean, obviously,
right.
Actual suicide or anything.
That's the point, right? Like, we've stressed this a couple of times on this show, and I think we will for, you know, I can't see us changing this. Every single phase is, every spring, every fall is, you don't need to get locked into what you were doing the previous phase.
Yep.
So you can go screaming bloody murder and saying, I'm going to throw all my dots in the spring. And in the fall, you can absolutely about face. And I know that seems really obvious.
Much,
it seems really obvious.
It's better off to establish for a season or two or three that you really are
just
in the process of not caring about your own dots, just trying to help Joe.
But I think oftentimes what people, like, especially when they're in these frustrating situations where they feel like their so-called allies are being just greedy and their other option is someone that is clearly going for the solo and needs all of their dots, they declare a sort of like, I'm going to help this other guy solo or I just want him to take all my dots sort of thing. They run that flag up and then they sort of are just comfortable with, well, this is what I'm doing, and they don't sort of say, oh, well, maybe I should change course. Like, people just sort of get locked into it.
That's also true. You should look for an opportunity every turn. I guess what I'm discouraging is if you're going to be the puppet of a soloist, be the puppet at least for a little while. Otherwise, no one's going to believe you, and they'll all just be like, all right, this guy's a loose cannon. Let's just go ahead and take him out. Like, if you're going to scream bloody murder about, I don't care, I'm just going to help this guy and let him take my dots, make some show of doing that.
Oh, yeah, and definitely, you know, do it for a while. That's not what I'm saying. I only wanted to just sort of hone in on that sort of don't get caught in the rut as if you don't ever have any other options.
Yeah, and also understand that from time to time, it's going to go exactly like that. Like, it can't always be a gambit. You really have to bury your behind in order to carry through on these things. You're just, if you say, hey, I'm going to throw all my dots to Joe and I'm going to let him write my orders and anything he wants to do, my pieces will do until such time as he deigns to, you're going to have to do that.
Right.
At least a little bit, because you're doing this partially for your reputation.
And you're doing it partially to like sway the game. If the people that you're doing this against don't see movement from the threat and they don't see you following through with it, then you it's a non-threat.
Yeah.
It's nothing.
And sometimes Joe is going to take you up on it. He's going to write your orders for a couple of turns or, you know, like tell you what to write for a couple of turns. He's going to take all your dots and you're going to be dead. And it's a little annoying because you kind of hoped he'd keep you alive for a while.
Right.
You know,
depends on the player.
I keep saying Joe. I mean Doug Moore.
Yeah, you know, or a number of other people. But,
yeah.
And I think, and I don't want to swing too far from the point,
sure.
But that is, you know, what the why, and where there's another subset here that we're going to get to, but the why of it is because those people stop acting rationally, yeah, and they are either really angry to the point that they are just out of their heads, and they now have a purpose of, like, I'm going to get those guys. I'm going to show them.
Yeah.
I'm going to show my competence in this game by outmaneuvering them and helping this other guy win.
On my way to dying.
On my way to dying. I'm going to die, but I'm going to show you my proficiency.
Yep. We'll call that one, let's see, we have the unicorn solo. We'll call this the, what do you want, the rage quit solo?
Ooh, I like, yeah, no, yeah, rage, yeah, that's not rage quit. Rage quit is just when
you actually just stop
when
playing.
You just actually rage,
yeah,
quit. But
yeah, all right, the hate solo.
Yeah. Oh, I like hate solo. I like, yeah, that. Right. So those are those people, and you need to, you know, if you're playing on the tournament scene or you're playing consistently, I mean, most online games, I think, are anonymous, but if you...
I still have hate solos.
Well, right, but I mean, I was talking about a reputational thing. Like, you'll learn to identify the people that do that.
I know, but I do them anyway. Even if I'm playing an anonymous game, I still like to throw tantrums and throw dots.
I'm saying, from a strategic point of view,
yeah,
I like to not take Eric out all the time because he could be useful later.
Yeah.
So we've gotten all those, and I think a lot of people intuitively know about those. So
from the hate solo now, but what do you want? The love solo?
Sure.
The solo of bromance.
Yeah, the bromancing the stone.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes, God, I don't even know how to describe these because they're inimical to my...
Well, then let me do it.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of different types of these. I mean, in the purest form, it's just you and your pal, you have a great alliance, and you just decide at a certain point, we're just going to go, and wherever this goes, it goes. So you have an RT, for example, maybe you have a, you know, let's just use RT. And, you know, things are pretty evenly divided. Obviously, Turkey has a disadvantage, but sometimes not. And there comes a certain point where you've just dominated the whatever, and you just agree. If one of us happens to get to 18, cool. Mm-hmm. We're just going to go for it. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to stop each other from doing it. So those definitely happen.
I have less to say about those. I don't know if you have more to say or not, but just sometimes someone's just enjoying an alliance, and they'll lose, and that's fine. And I guess
it's weird that you're gagging when you say this.
I soloed this once, and even afterwards, I was a little perplexed by it. But like the guy kind of told me, like, if this ends, you know, 18-15-3, and I'm the 15, I had a great time doing it.
And you're like, thank you very much.
I was like, well, then let's do it that way. Sometimes people are just enjoying an alliance, and they kind of know they're going to lose. They kind of know maybe they're going to get stabbed, so they'd like to just get as big as possible before that happens. I don't know. I guess maybe one variant on it that's slightly more rational but still kind of irrational is the one where two people decide to do a two-way, and it turns out to be one of those 18-16 two-ways.
Well, and that happens a little bit when scoring systems are weighted such that two-ways are so highly rewarded that people actually go after them. That I think that's usually what drives that. Well, what relatedly also drives that is sometimes the tournament scoring will drive that. There's every once in a while people are like, I need a big result, and there's two guys that need a big result, and they go for it. Or there are two guys that are... I mean, like, this happens, and I want to say, I don't know of a single time that this has ever actually happened that I can verify. But every once in a while, you know, like, people from the same town will be like, well, I'm going to give this guy a solo because he's a friend of mine.
Right.
That's super... I don't think that happens very often. We're just all too competitive.
People accuse each other of that a lot more often than it actually does
happen.
Yeah,
I'm sure it doesn't happen that often.
I've never seen it either.
But we definitely talk a lot of crap and accuse people of doing it.
Yeah, people are just like, oh, his buddy was just helping him and didn't care whether he...
Right.
I don't really think that that's true. I think usually his buddy just doesn't really know what his, quote, buddy, unquote, is doing.
Maybe his guard's a little bit down because they are good friends or something. But
yeah.
We're just too competitive of creatures.
Pretty much, in any of those circumstances, there's always a stab on the last turn.
Yeah.
Or two, or three, but yeah.
But the buddy solos do come up occasionally, you know.
Again, another form of people being irrational, but irrational in a way that you have to be wise to.
Right.
You know, if you've realized that... I mean, I can think of games where, you know, a couple of people are in a good alliance on the other side of the board and going to them every turn and making the argument, he's going to stab you. He's going to stab you.
Oh, yeah.
And they go, yeah, if he stabs me, he stabs me. At some point, you have to realize that that's not the tactic. At some point, you have to give up on that, even though you know you're being rational and he's being irrational.
Yeah, you gotta try every time.
He's like, yeah, well, if he does, he does. I'm having a good time. I've heard that before.
Oh, yeah.
And if that happens, you have to go, all right, well, then this is the guy we have to kill. forget the guy that's going to stab the guy. Let's get the stabbee out of this game as quick as possible.
Well, I mean, the obvious thing to do there is to make the game no longer fun for him. Like, he's enjoying the game.
Sure.
Make it kind
of not.
Turn
the board against him.
Yeah, turn the board against him and make it not fun. And then suddenly you have somebody who's like, oh, this isn't fun anymore. And then you are there to step out from the side stage and go, you know what? Here's how we can make it fun again.
Yeah.
Or here's how this can be a good time again.
Yeah.
You know, that you just have to figure out what that is and be lucky enough to be in a position where you can actually affect that.
Sure.
So, anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's why. For all of those... What's interesting to me, and I wish I could talk about this with more competence, it's interesting to me that it happens online in the exact same way that it happens face-to-face.
Yeah. Well, we didn't even really talk about the last kind, I guess, that we're going to categorize here. And I feel like this one happens a lot online, the indifference solo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to win.
Somebody's going to win. I stopped fighting, like, the solo from our contest from those last...
Oh, yeah.
...couple of episodes where, like, England and France were the only people that really...
Could have done anything.
We're like, trying to stop a solo, and everybody else was like, eh, if you solo, I guess that's okay.
Right. There's a whole... I mean, there's definitely that indifference out there, and that absolutely happens on face-to-face as well. There, you just... Mm-hmm. You get people, especially when you have one of those grind-down games... Where you have, like, you're playing for, like, 8 hours or something.
Yeah.
And, like, this only happens in tournaments because anybody else is like, why am I going to do this for 8 hours? But, like, you get grind down, and you're pretty much in, like, a four-way, three-way sort of a deal. Mm-hmm. And someone's just like, you know what? I am sick of doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to walk away because it's just that's the one of the only rules. I can't walk away, but I'm just going to stop engaging. And if someone else, you know... Or maybe you'll pull back a little bit or something.
Yeah. It's a game. And if people aren't having any fun doing it, they're going to stop trying to win sometimes.
Right.
I think all of those categories of solo that we just listed are examples of somebody getting irrational for some reason. And the question, how does anybody ever solo, I guess, is answered by, well, maybe if you have 7 robots, nobody ever does. You know?
Yeah.
But somebody
smart said that once.
Yeah, like a little while ago.
Yeah, that's right.
And it was Benjamin Franklin, I think.
The world's first diplomacy player.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to, like, put a, you know, make irrational sound pejorative. It's just shorthand for, you know, not playing in complete emotionless vacuum.
No. Definitely. I'm saying to a person who thinks that everybody plays rationally, it probably is pejorative.
Yeah.
But those people are missing the point of our game. Revel in the irrationalness of diplomacy because that's what makes it different from other games. That's what makes it more fun than other games is that it's a game very much rooted in emotion. Very much rooted in people behaving irrationally. And if you can't internalize that, if you can't, you know, hey, frankly, if you can't take advantage of that,
right,
you're playing the wrong game.
Right.
You're supposed to go and exploit ways in which other people are irrational.
Which is, you know, analogous to diplomacy in real life. I mean, like, if you get it off the board, it's all about people and it's all about, like, how can we get this sort of thing going? And it's easy. It's, you know, like any other game, the game's easy when nothing's on the line. You know, when you go around the Monopoly board, you just collect the things. It's super easy.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You know, the emotion doesn't come in until you start taking things from people.
And I say that as a person who proudly plays irrationally all the darn time and gets fairly good results in my games. It's sort of like a battle of trading mistakes, trading irrationalness. Like, you can't get extremely good unless you're a little irrational yourself.
Right.
From time to time, you can't always play rationally, or you'll just be lost.
Yeah, you won't be lost, per se. You just will only get to a certain point.
Well, you'll never get great alliances.
No.
I don't think. I think every once in a while you have to say, you know what? This guy might solo on me, but I'm really having fun doing this. Let's just roll.
Right. And essentially what you're saying is you got to take some risks if you want any rewards. I mean, like, that's really what you're saying. Like,
risks, not just peace risks, not just board position risks.
Relationship risks.
Emotional risks.
Yeah.
It's a big part of the game, and recognizing the emotional things that other people are doing. I used to always call it the finding people's secondary objectives.
Right.
You know, everybody wants to win.
Sure.
We know that everybody wants to, when they show up at the board, they imagine themselves getting to 18. Or most people do. Anyway, imagine themselves getting to 18. When they realize that that's not going to happen, when events on the board demonstrate to them that that's not going to happen, that's when they start being motivated by other things.
Right, you got to figure out what that is.
It's the most important. I know I've said this about three or four things, but I'm just gonna go out on a limb and say again, it's the most important thing you can do in diplomacy: identify other people's secondary motivations.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway, I hope that answers some questions. Like, why is it? Because we're essentially, God, we're way metaphysical. Because we're human.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why. But recognize just. I mean, I'm a little more maybe Machiavellian, like recognizing when it's happening and trying to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
And recognizing it when you yourself are starting to like slip into that place where you're like, I'm angry. What do I want to do? I want to throw this solo. And the reason we want to do that, you know, which is seemingly obvious, like it's because it feels active. It feels like you're doing something.
Sure.
So recognize it when you're doing it and channel it towards something. So that's why it happens, guys.
And that's not bad. It's not bad, and there doesn't need to be anything insidious about us saying take advantage of it when you recognize when other people are doing it. We're not saying just like manipulate them emotionally, although that can
happens.
Be part of it.
And I'd say on the rarer side of things.
I'm saying that you need to be having conversations all the time that aren't just, will you support me to Bulgaria? Conversations that are like, how do you feel like your alliance with that guy is going?
Yeah.
Do you trust him?
Hey,
do you like him?
How is that guy?
Are you enjoying it? Do you feel like you've been mistreated? You know, not maybe in so many words.
Do you feel safe?
Yeah, exactly. But trying to feel out people's emotional states, because they're going to be doing it to you, and it is part of the game. And sometimes you even need to be honest when people ask you that.
Yeah,
you know,
you never know you never know.
You can't always be cagey. You know, a lot of times games come down to things like, I just didn't like how that guy talked to me.
Yeah.
On that turn, I just didn't like, you know. I just don't let, or to bring it home a little bit, I just didn't like how you talked to me.
Right.
That's why I did that. That's why I went with the other guy. You weren't respectful.
Right. Or something. Or what? I hear respectful every once in a while, or I just didn't trust you, or I thought you, what I took away from what you said was that you were doing this when.
And then you didn't do that. I didn't think you'd ever move to this territory, and I thought that was an incursion. These are the things that games come down to, not sometimes, routinely.
Right.
These are and a lot of times, someone's reaction to that is what causes a solo.
And this is, and I think we've really wrapped up the discussion. Yep. But I just want to insert like one last like pro tip.
Sure.
So. You're new to diplomacy, or you're newish to diplomacy, or you've just been playing diplomacy for 25 years and you want to know, like, what can I do to improve my game? I've definitely, not that I'm like an expert on this sort of thing, but.
I want to know, Nathan, what can I do to improve
my game? But here's the thing, but you already do this. Take the time after a game to debrief.
Yeah.
Do an end of game statement if you're online. Read the end of game statements that other people do, especially, and if they don't do anything specific and they just say, great game, follow up with them. Figure out what it was that happened.
Mm-hmm.
How did they react to what you did?
Mm-hmm.
And especially if there's a solo situation and you're not the person soloing, you want to know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And take the time for the love of God, take the time to figure out what it is you did that made them act the way they act.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to take
some
responsibility.
Sometimes you'll be surprised.
You'll be blown away.
Yeah.
What people will say to you, like, oh, I just, you know, here's what you did, and you'll be surprised. They have it right. They know exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. I wouldn't say 90% of the time, but at least 50%.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
They will tell you, here it is, 1903, in the spring, here's what you wrote me, here's what you said to me, this, and that made me do this. Now, sometimes, you know, to be completely honest, they may be, you know, misremembering the past to justify their actions, but
And or if they're expert players, they also might be
just kind
of gaming you a little bit.
Absolutely, and you've got to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt.
Oh, no, if you'd have gone to Romania that turn, I totally would have done that.
Yeah. And if it's something simple like that, but it's the things you really want to attune to, which most people don't, aren't facetious about and are not lying about, is, you know, how they interpreted what you said to them.
Yeah.
You really, really want to tune into that stuff and use that for future games and really think about, oh, okay, when I said this to this person, this is how they reacted. Obviously, every person's different, and you know, it doesn't mean you have to change it, but you have to recognize and try and internalize what's being told to you. So definitely seek that out. That's the pro tip.
We topic drifted a little bit there, obviously,
as we want
to do, but it was all good stuff, I think. There was one more thing I had written on my little list here.
Oh, good.
Why would you ever not solo when you could?
Oh, I'm sorry. We should have done that one first. But
well,
whoops.
It's okay. It's an interesting, because you hear these every once in a while.
Oh, I've done these.
I have to.
Yeah,
once or twice.
Definitely
choosing not to solo in a situation where you probably could have.
Yep.
Sometimes again, an irrational thing, but an irrational thing that people really do. And there, with a little bit of rational underneath.
Yeah, I think so.
Sometimes it just feels too dirty.
There are times when it just feels really dirty. I mean, like, for me, that's mostly in house game situations.
Yep.
When you've just gotten, like, and we'll talk about this in future episodes and when we get around to it, but when you're trying to build a hobby and you're trying to build a community in your local area and you invite just, like, sort of people that are interested in gaming but have never played before, like,
or even if they've played a few times but it's just not their thing and you're trying to get them more into it.
And whatever. They're, you know, sometimes they're just doing you a favor and like filling in while you try and recruit like the two guys that are there or the, you know, whoever.
Yeah.
You know, when those are times when you're winning. Hooray. So you don't, you know, please, if when you guys are out there trying to get the people to play Diplomacy, which I know some of you are out there trying to do, please don't just solo on them.
Yeah, we've said it before.
I know, we'll say it again. Please don't. because nothing turns people off more than that, but we're drifting off topic with that.
Yeah, we know you can.
You're awesome.
In a tournament situation?
Yeah, definitely done in a tournament situation as well.
Once or twice.
Yeah.
Once or twice.
So, and I'll tell you, and I don't know, Eric might have a different take on this.
I think
for me, do you think are we the same on this one?
Good.
All right. For me, I tend to think very broadly about the implications of that particular solo, both at a tournament level and both at like a meta tournament level.
Learn my lesson.
Your story is better than mine. I think I know where you're going with that, but for me, like, if it's round one, I'm pretty hesitant to, like, just force my way into a solo because I think it's going to put a target on me. And if the scoring system isn't such
that I
need to make sure, like, if my solo in round one doesn't sort of guarantee me a really high placement.
I actually think that one's kind of baloney, though. I think if it's round one or round shmun, all else being equal, solo.
Yeah. And maybe you're right.
It's not like you're going to get there again all that often. Solos are rare enough that if you have a shot at one, no matter what round it is, you should probably go for it.
You probably should, but it'll depend on, like, the other thing is, like, sometimes I'm doing it with somebody that I don't particularly want them to lose, and this maybe goes back to the buddy solo thing, or I don't know.
Well, it doesn't have to be the buddy thing. It can be the, wow, this guy's never going to trust me again if I do this.
Right, and I'm going to see this guy for the next 10 years.
Yeah, and that's a legitimate thing. That I've made decisions based on that before, and I think pretty much a lot of people in the hobby, like tournament and online, have made that decision of just like, I'm going to play with this guy again. I just told him that I swore on the lives of his children that I wouldn't move to the Mid-Atlantic. I'd probably better not move to the Mid-Atlantic now.
That's an interpersonal relationship thing. You're like, I can't. That's just a line I'm not going to cross.
Yeah.
So, yes, that absolutely happens, and I've been there as well.
Or if it's a guy this is the first time you've ever worked with him after 7 bad games in a row.
This is a little close to home, isn't it, Eric?
Well, sure. Yeah, a little bit, I guess. It's come up. There's some people that I've soloed on that I shouldn't have. But in situations where it wasn't important enough, also, to justify, you know, use your own conscience as a guide, on things like this. But it is true that sometimes you'll have a solo that you could take and you just choose not to.
Right. Much to the frustration of those people that were angry that are throwing you the solo.
Oh, God.
Because those are the worst situations where you've gotten someone.
I've actually been that guy.
Yeah.
I'm just like, please.
Just take the last solo. Nope, I'm voting a five-way draw.
Without you in it.
Without you in it.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I'm going to go drink myself to sleep on that note.
No, so we can wrap up now. Like, I really think that gives you sort of a wide gamut of the different ways of why solos happen, and gives you a little insight into why there are probably as little solos. There are a few solos out there that could have happened that didn't, for sort of meta tournament, sort of just interpersonal relationship reasons.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure that happens, you know, online and face to face. So
definitely.
It's out there. All right. You've gotten a whole lot of insight onto soloing. No, obviously, huge amount of detail, logistical, how to solo. Maybe we'll do that some other time. But this, I think, what the tools we've given you,
there's. I think we know that. Details of logistical.
Yeah, we do. There's the Machiavellian right hook.
Yeah.
Remember that one? There's the. Kiel bulldozer.
The count the old St. Petersburg is 18, no matter which side you're on. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what we call a reoccurring joke, folks. Thanks so much for listening. We're going to be back here really, really soon.
We also have an interview coming up right after this.
Joining us now, we have the much-esteemed Mark Ward, who's definitely been out there and I think familiar to a lot of the online players. He's been on, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, I think it's Play Diplomacy?
No, Web Diplomacy.
Web Diplomacy. You see, this is why I have to ask. And has done a lot of great things out there. And I personally met him, and I think, Eric, you met him as well at WAC last year.
Yep.
He was a great sport coming out, doing a little face-to-face, and we had some good times talking about those experiences. So, Mark, welcome.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So what's the sort of Play Diplomacy / Web Diplomacy kind of schism? It kind of seems like two different subcultures to me, and I'm not really sure I know the difference between the different styles and the different, you know, is there a difference really? Or do most people play it both?
There's no difference to me. I don't pay attention to any other online diplomacy. I just play on the one, and so I don't know what you might be talking about.
Okay. Tell us a little more about Web Diplomacy. How long have you been doing that?
I've been on there about 3 years, I suppose. Before that, I just played a handful of times with friends. We'd get like four people. So people would be playing two great powers, and we didn't know the rules. We didn't finish a game. We just kind of goofed around a little bit.
Sure.
We also have that story.
Well, I started Web Diplomacy maybe 3 years ago or so, and I won the first 10 games I joined, so it seemed like a lot of fun to me.
Yeah, that makes it for good fun.
Yeah, we had a little bit of controversy. There's some games that are points per supply center, where you get rewarded for a good second place if you give up a solo, versus a winner-take-all kind of format. And so starting up, I just play a lot of the point per supply center, and you could just talk people into letting you solo, and it was really fun, but that can get a little boring too, so.
Oh, that's interesting. So there's not, so there's multiple scoring systems kind of kicking around on.
Yeah, there are lots of different variables. There are variants you can play. You can play gunboat. So they have lots of different options for whatever you like to play. I stick to just the classic game, but lots of people like to experiment and goof around with all of them.
Yeah. So then is there somewhere that's where they're generally an agreed upon tracking of who's doing well on that site versus who's not?
Yeah, there's one guy from London set up a ranking system that is based on the ELO ranking, where your opponent has a certain ranking, and that kind of depends. It's all kind of based on, your ranking is based on the people you play.
Yep.
Not explaining that very well.
No,
but,
no. Yeah.
So the better your competition, the more points you can win from that game, and the worse your competition, the more you risk, the worse you'll get. And so that's always pretty fun. He puts it out on a monthly basis, and it's just kind of exciting for everyone to see that, and it encourages people to play better and, you know, not give away solos, obviously. So that's good for the site.
Sure. And so that's something that people actually do look at and kind of try and follow along with.
Yeah, a lot of people get pretty excited about it. So it's fun to see where you go each month and see how you're doing.
So the scoring system, and then we'll move off this, and so we sound like we're a little obsessed. Do you get to, when you opt into a game, do you choose the scoring system, or does Web Diplomacy have just one standard scoring system, and then all the things you're talking about are just sort of other people, you know?
When you create a game, you get to decide if you want points per supply center or winner take all. And the default is points per supply center, which is a sore spot for many people.
Okay.
Because that's kind of considered the lesser game, and the more true game is the winner take all.
I would agree.
Yeah. Well, but then in the case of a draw, winner take all means winners take all. Is that in the event of a draw?
In a draw, then the pot split equally between everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And so the idea behind it is to encourage new people to learn, and so they're rewarded for doing well. That's the points per supply center, so that's why it's a default. So new people will play that.
Oh, that's okay. That makes sense.
People who've been there a while don't like that so much.
And the rating system that we were talking about that everyone looks at is based on the winner take all.
It's based on everything.
It's based on everything. Okay.
Yeah, there's a different system for each variant. And
So he just shows. Okay, that makes sense. Well, that's cool.
Is that just someone that does that independently, or is that just part of the site?
It's independent right now.
Okay,
he kind of came up with his own formula and plugs in all the data.
That's something that we've sort of tried to have a few times in the world of face-to-face, and it's really hard to get anybody to agree on any kind of a rating system that anybody can live with, and I think it's something that's sort of missing from the face-to-face hobby is a rating system, and the one that you're describing, the one where people risk points proportional to their actual existing score, it seems common sense to me. It seems like a good way to score diplomacy, but there's so many people that have a problem with they don't understand it, and so they don't like it.
We've had that system.
Yeah. We've used it at individual tournaments, but we've never...
That's Buzz Eddie's system.
Well, that's Buzz Eddie's system, but Buzz Eddie's system had a million Buzz Eddie secret fudge factors that he would not reveal.
That's true. Well, and I think not, and then we'll get back to...
Yeah, sorry.
So, Mark, we don't want not to go too far.
You still there, Mark?
Not to go too far afield. But I think... In this case, like it's amazing what happens when someone just says, "Hey, you know what? I'll do that," and then just starts doing it.
Yeah,
which is how we came up with the other system, and I think that's one of the really great things. Like, if you go around trying to get people to buy in, you're gonna have a lot harder time.
It's true. Right? So, anybody tournament hobby people out there that just want to start keeping a system like this,
yes, please. More power to you.
Yeah, we support you.
Just make it transparent so we know what it is. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, Mark, I heard that. And I think we briefly talked about that you had gotten sort of a get-together of people that were on Web Diplomacy and sort of had a tournament or a get-together or something last year.
Yeah, we did a face-to-face tournament in Boston in early June.
Right.
And it was mostly people from Web Diplomacy, probably 80% or so. And so that was really fun. I loved that. As you know, I played at WACCON in Seattle last January,
and
I had a not so good experience. Experience. The experience was great, but the results didn't match up. And so it was really interesting to see the difference between playing these people that, sure, I'd never met them, but we'd played online a lot, so everyone kind of had a reputation and expectations and kind of had a feel for each other. And so that just made a world of difference for me personally, compared to going to Seattle with not knowing anybody and just how that played out.
So, oh man, I have so many questions there. So, what was the experience like of getting a lot of people that were predominantly known as like really good online players and sort of having this, okay, I mean, you know, which is not to say nobody had any face-to-face experience, but like most of them had kind of, most of you had kind of made your reputations online. What was the experience of everybody having to do that adjustment all at once to playing face-to-face? Was it, I mean, was it really hard or was it just like a total blast because everyone was kind of in the same boat or?
That's how it seemed more to me, like everyone was kind of in the same boat. So it was kind of a leveling of the playing field. There were a couple people that had a lot of face-to-face experience that, of course, did very well because they knew exactly what they were doing. But most of us seemed to be kind of level playing field and, you know, the short time clock and all that kind of stuff we're not used to. I personally wasn't used to. We do have live games on Web Diplomacy.
Yeah.
So it was, it was great. I loved it.
So just logistically speaking, what kind of clocks did you have? Because I would think typically the timing is usually problematic, or just it's, you're just not used to it. So did you do like rules timing, like 15 minutes per round, or did you extend it out so that people had more time? Or
no, I think it was 15 minutes per round.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool.
It's been a little while though, so.
Yeah.
Oh no! I wondered if you everybody sat down and said, you know, let's extend this out.
All
a little
the
bit.
Boards were on the same clock.
Yeah, that's good.
So
in Seattle.
But so you found
should have been on the same clock in Seattle. they will be this year.
Okay.
Yeah. The central clock thing is we like it a lot, but it's sort of harder to arrange. Like there's some physical logistics that you kind of have to deal with when you're dealing with the central clock. But yeah. The online event, you said that people who had a little bit of face-to-face experience had like a big edge at that event. It felt like.
To some extent, there was one local face-to-face player that came, Alex, and he was running Boston Massacre.
It's Alex.
And so he, like I was saying, he had the face-to-face experience, but he didn't know all the different people. And all of us, we had the names we use on Web Diplomacy. We had name tags, so we kind of knew our reputations and what to expect. And so we had an edge up on him on that level, and he was the first to get nominated to play multiple boards.
Right.
Right.
So that was kind of interesting.
Right.
The first day we had 18 people. So every board, let's see, we didn't even have 18. We may have had 17. So every board had an auto Italy doing prescribed moves.
Oh, yeah.
Another game had Alex playing two.
Mm-hmm.
It was in two different games. And so it didn't work the best, but it was still fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it was great.
Are you guys going to do it again?
There's talk about, we haven't got it organized yet, but we're talking about moving next time to the Midwest or a different location in the States to try and get different people pulled in.
Right, right.
So we've kind of been edging around the I'd definitely be curious to hear your take on some sort of differences in the way that the people who've played most of their diplomacy online versus people who've played most of their diplomacy face-to-face sort of approach the game. What are some differences you've noticed?
Oh, boy, that's a big question.
Yeah, it is.
I'm not that good at analyzing that kind.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to me that through playing on Web Diplomacy that I just kind of have a different style of playing where I think I'm just kind of more of a game player, and so I take a different approach, and it seems a little different, and maybe that's a reason for my success on the internet.
Yeah.
And being able to analyze, okay, this person's does this approach on the internet versus that approach face-to-face?
Oh, well, yeah.
How do we process that so well?
That wasn't necessarily, like, not on a person-by-person basis, but I guess I'll help you out a little bit and start, like, I feel like people who play,
I'm sorry, I threw you in the deep end there.
Yeah,
I guess I'll throw you a little something.
I feel like people on who play more online than face-to-face have sort of a more analytical approach to the game as compared to a more intuitive approach that you get from face-to-face players. Like, face-to-face players often are flying by the seat of their pants in comparison, like, kind of making it up as they go along. Have you noticed any of that?
Well, that's pretty ironic you said that, because I feel on the internet I'm totally flying by the seat of my pants, making it up. It's like, holy cows, I have no idea what's going on here, but let's try this and that, and things tend to work out, as opposed to, so maybe that's right. Maybe I'm a face-to-facer stuck in a online body.
That's how I always used to feel when I'd play online, for sure. I, you know, people would make lists of 10 rational arguments about why I should do this thing, and my counter-argument would be like, come on. Come on. It'll be fun.
What about this?
It'll be fun. Come on. And sometimes it would work, and frequently it wouldn't. But yeah, no, but it seems like a lot of the people that I would play against when I was online had sort of a deeper understanding about kind of the mechanics of the board and the longer term.
Well, yeah, you have so much more time to look at the board and analyze, and, you know, I'm kind of a thinker and not real quick to sort through things, and so I'll sleep on things, and
sure,
it's nice to just step away and whatever, you're not even paying attention, and all of a sudden you're eating supper and you have some idea.
Yeah.
Pathetic as that is, it's like, oh, I should do that.
Oh, no, okay. Totally.
No,
so it is a totally different vibe, and my skill set seems to go very well with the internet and not so much in person.
Well, I don't know if that's true, because the common thread that I'm, you know, if I was to pull something out of you talking about both experiences, is like it matters a lot if you sort of have if you have some insight into the players. So, you know, when you're playing face-to-face, if you know people and you have some, you know, idea of their reputation, it's easier to be successful. You know, when you came to WAC and you didn't know anybody, it was a different feel than when you went to Boston where you knew a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I think that's really, I mean, if that is the problem, I mean, that's not insurmountable. It's just, it's good to know that, rather than sort of the stereotype that I think, you know, Eric was sort of hinting at, like looking for you to dispel a little bit. And that's not really a question. I'm wondering if that sort of feels right. Is it about the reputations?
For me, going to Seattle, it was to me, it just seemed like people who kind of knew each other would want to ally with them, just because they'd know when they're going to stab. They'd know what they're going to do. There's something reliable versus some random guy off the street that you don't even know if they can write their orders or what. So it just seemed like sort of this buddy kind of system where, for me, not, you know, wanting to drive 6 hours every weekend, you know, pay for motels all the time, to put in all that time and expense to then go and get teamed up by buddies, and it's like, well, that's kind of...
No, right, exactly. But and I guess this is my question. Did it feel different when you were in Boston and then you did know people? Did it have the same sort of buddy feel to it?
Well, it didn't have a buddy feel to me, because I think I had a certain level of respect just from playing online and people knowing where I stood. That just kind of buys you all that you need to do well in the game.
Yeah, people who are able to kind of approach any given situation and go, oh, well, he's Mark Ward, he does this.
Right.
And you know, whether you have some knowledge of them that were, I mean, sure, it's totally like that at tournaments, you know, because people play a lot together and they do get to know each other's play styles, and I I mean, for every person that I do kind of like to ally with at tournaments, there's probably two or three people that I can't stand allying with, and I'd much rather work with someone that I'd never, ever worked before at tournaments. Yeah, yeah. The Chris Martin's joke about how, like, I keep going back because I hate them all so much. Yeah.
Right. I can't stand them.
Yeah.
No, I just was wondering, I think it's an interesting contrast, like, oh, okay, this is how it felt, and then, you know, it was similar when you knew people. Anyway.
I think for me, too, that I'd like to think online that I'm a relatively honest and good ally for much of the game, well into the end game, which you never really see in face-to-face.
Right.
So I'd like to think I was presenting myself as a good ally and people would team up with me and do well. And so having that reputation there that people knew.
Yeah, it's super helpful.
I think the other part about the tournament thing is we kind of gossip like schoolgirls a little bit, and it not always just in a bad way, like in a way where if somebody shows up and everyone's like, hey, who's that guy, within a game, if you played a good first game, like, people kind of know, like, oh, that guy can write his orders.
Yeah.
And then, you know, mid-tournament, you usually start finding all of a sudden people are like, oh, do you want to try something here? You know,
it might take a whole tournament. You never know.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, exactly.
We could talk about this all night, though.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think it's kind of an interesting subject, but
That is true.
That makes one of me, apparently.
Yeah. I don't think we're gonna. You know, the idea is to get a little perspective
But
I want to know how Mark solos. That's really where I'm going with it.
Oh, okay. He does? Whoa, that's awesome.
He does. He told you that he won the first 10 games he played.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
but those were the points per supply center games, and so there you just find someone who you'll advance and help you win.
Yeah.
And so in that kind of setup, it's pretty easy. In the winner take all, then that, I mean, it's really difficult, and I've struggled to find out the keys personally. I mean, typically I'd try and do a reverse analysis where I think, okay, in what situations would I help someone else solo?
Sure.
You know, if it's some superpower, two mediums, and I'm the little guy, and the two medium guys are beating up on me, then I'm going to help the big guy solo, obviously.
Sure.
So if I'm trying to solo, I'll try and identify those people that will help me. And along with that, I just try and be friendly and nice with everyone in the game, the whole game, when that makes sense. So later on, when they're getting beaten up on, they are more than happy to help me solo.
Yeah, that was actually the topic of our show this week, just sort of the how there's needs to end up being somebody behaving kind of irrationally.
Right.
In order for a solo to happen, somebody has to kind of lose their self-interest for one reason or another, either because they love you or they hate you, or, you know, or they hate somebody else. Or, I mean, yeah, if you have anything to add on that kind of train of thought.
Well, there are kind of situations where, you know, people are butting heads and there's lots of frustration. So there are ways to kind of feed into that and encourage that and make the situation a heck of a lot worse so it gets to the point that you need.
Yeah.
And I might have been reading into something, but you mentioned, you know, being a nice guy the whole time. Maybe I'm misreading you, but is that atypical? Like, is there often someone in web diplomacy that's like, oh, there's that guy? Do you expect when you sit down in the game, there's going to be one guy who's sort of like, I don't know who he is, and he just is sort of, I don't know, I don't want to say mean or whatever. Does that happen a lot, or is it a pretty close-knit community and people are playing with the same group of people over and over?
No, we got a nice range of people. There are lots of people that just lose it, go nuts, and it's kind of interesting, and lots of times those people are people I try to avoid playing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Some of them can do that in a controlled manner, in an effective manner. Some people just do it because I don't know what they're thinking, but they really seem to be angry people.
Right. It makes them feel better, and it doesn't have anything to do with the game at that point.
Yeah. And that's another point I like about playing on the internet is in face-to-face, when you come across those people, it's like horrible.
Yeah.
You can't get away. And on the internet, it's like, okay, I know not to play that person anymore. So that part's kind of nice. But yeah, we have all different personalities, and there are definitely a lot of people that get really angry and upset, and
yeah,
it turns a lot of people off to playing with them. So a lot of the kind of people who have a lot of success typically aren't like that. And so a lot of games will start up based on your ranking, and the top seven people are in the one game and the next seven people. So you're kind of playing people of your own ranking, and that makes for a lot better games, I think.
Oh, okay. So you, I guess the not eloquent question I was asking is, you don't sit down to a game and you just expect there to be one guy who just is going to be angry and blow up. You've actually created a system in which you angle for, like, playing with decent folks or, like, competitive folks or people that aren't going to be doing that so much.
Definitely, because another thing that is a problem on the internet is people, you know, quitting, not submitting their moves.
Yep.
And so to get around that, I personally try to play higher ranked people that don't tend to do that.
Right.
So I do a lot of filtering personally with who I play to avoid that angry, to avoid the people that are new and don't really know what they're doing. So that sounds.
There's some kind of like reliability statistics that you can look at also in terms of when you're.
Yeah, all your games, you can look at a person's profile and it'll tell you how many games they've left.
Yep.
And so that's a quick thing you look at to see, okay, is this person just going to quit on us and ruin the game for everybody? And
yep.
So then they tend to get blacklisted by certain people.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, literally, if you've ever left one game, is that sort of like, oh, you're one of those people? It used to be when I played online, like, if leaving a game was, there were a few things more taboo than that. I'm just wondering if it's still the same in an age where I feel like there's a lot more people online and a lot more sort of cavalier, casual play.
It's a definite topic. And so some people, if they have like two resigns on their profile, you can write some text. And so they'll explain why they left those games. Or if you're trying to recruit people that don't do that and someone has a few, then people will just ask you about it. What was the reason? Did you just quit? Or were you just new and now you don't do that? Or people will have a discussion about it.
That is really cool.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I didn't know. I guess I somehow imagined that there would be these games where people wandered in, they'd play two moves and run away. But I guess it's not like that.
In face-to-face, I will say
that...
Those
are the people I try to avoid.
Yeah. Right.
In face-to-face, I will say that people don't abandon very often just because of the personal shame of it. Like, you actually have to look a bunch of people in the eye and say, hey, I'm just leaving my pieces and going home. And people don't usually do it for that reason. Occasionally, you get somebody who, like, leaves in fury or else, you know, has to work at 6.
It's pretty rare.
But that is one thing that... that I do remember about the internet is you're not really like in internet play, you're not really as accountable. You know, you're just some guy that, I mean, you are accountable if you're trying to be accountable to a community like web diplomacy or something like that. But if you're just kind of showing up, playing a couple games, you're not really accountable and you can abandon. So it's cool that there's sort of a mechanism for trying to encourage people to stick with games that's even stronger than it was when I was playing, it sounds like.
Yeah. That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, and recently we also had a thread where a person is organizing live games as a club with people that won't quit. And so you can play, anyone can sign up for that, but if you quit a game, then you're banned from ever playing another game with that group of people, knowing that that's one of the top priorities is you don't drop out.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
This was, this sounds a lot like the Vermont group, actually.
Yeah. That's not still around, I don't think, is it?
No, I think it's gone. Okay. I think after Massey.
Good.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Did you just say good?
Yes, good, because I played in that tournament, their like big face-to-face tournament like 2 years or two cycles in a row, and each of those cycles took like 2 years, and it consumed my life both times. But anyway.
Sorry, man. That was a bitter 4 years, sounds like.
I know.
That's really... Wow. That's
I'm in recovery. I'm in therapy over those games, but yeah.
Well, you know, Mark, I'm glad to hear that you're still going to do... It sounds like you're interested in doing like the face-to-face thing with the web diplomacy people, and I think that's very cool that you guys are trying and like doing a face-to-face thing but still having the online thing and sort of merging it, and, you know, I'm stoked
about
that.
Yeah, it was really fun. It was a blast.
Really stoked about that. And if let us know when that sort of thing's happening, and not that we were going to necessarily come and ruin your game, but, you know, at least we can, if someone was in the Midwest, and, like, you might want to talk to whoever, wherever you go, at least, you know, have somebody like Alex go, and you can go kick his butt, which is, you know, Alex loves that. He's not coming to WAC this year, unfortunately. Can't make it.
I mean, I think it is interesting to sort of, as just kind of an experiment in, I mean, us from the tournament diplomacy standpoint, we have the experience of having the occasional person who plays a lot online show up at a face-to-face tournament, like who comes from that world, show up at a face-to-face tournament, and sometimes it goes well, sometimes it doesn't go well, and you know, sometimes they stick around, sometimes they don't. But it is interesting to sort of create this thing where all of the onliners are playing at one event, and then we can drop a face-to-face person in every once in a while and kind of see, you know, do that science experiment and see how that goes. I find that interesting.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. I know, I mean, just because, like, yeah, you know, we like the same game, but we don't really want to play with you because you guys suck. You know, that's essentially what I'm getting at. You know, Mark had I'm sure, and Mark and I talked about it, he had a great time at WAC because we had great hosts, but the diplomacy itself sounds like, you know, it was a little bit, did you play Austria more than once?
No, just the first game.
Yeah, and you sort of just got, just in, like, imploded.
Well, I wrote up a whole thing up on Web Diplomacy about my experience that goes into great detail on how horrible I played.
Yeah, I know. I think I read that. It was interesting. But no,
you weren't supposed to.
I know. It's all right.
Nathan knows all.
No, it was. I mean, I didn't go looking for it, but you know, it was sent my way. You know, it's not. It's been a while since I've read it, so I'm sure it's fine. But anyway.
I used to like going to tournaments and getting shredded. I don't like it anymore because it's happened enough times that now it's no fun anymore because I've gone to tournaments and done well too, but I used to like to go to tournaments and get my butt kicked and then go home and be like, wow, what just happened to me?
But that's true. That's true.
But maybe I'm just perverse and masochistic that way.
I think so.
I think that's probably what it is. What else, Nathan?
Anything else you want to share with us? Mark, it was really great checking in with you and, like, getting your perspective on things. Like, I don't know, when we were talking on email, if you had, it sounded like you had maybe some things you wanted to share or not.
No, I don't have anything specific to share.
I don't know, maybe you were like,
you
have
to ask me a question.
Yeah, you know, see, we're punting on that. We were,
I'm not going to help you.
Yeah, exactly, you shouldn't. We threw you in the deep end, you should do the same thing for us. No, I was actually, you know, this is usually we do about a half hour, so I wanted to ask you the question, which is that we ask everyone, you know, what's the biggest mistake you've ever made in a diplomacy game? And this could be any kind of mistake, whether it's you misread somebody, you misordered, you know, just something you really look back on and go, wow, I'm never going to do that again. Or are you all your games perfect?
No, the audio keeps cutting out, but the big, I don't have a good answer for that. I mean, I've done the stupid things where I'll support an attack on North Sea and they'll retreat into one of my vacant supply centers.
Oh, yeah.
One guy once threatened to blackmail me. We have a global chat box in our games. So he threatened to blackmail me. And, of course, my response was to immediately blackmail him. And that didn't go well for several years in the game, but I ended up getting the solo, so I guess it did okay.
Yeah, no, they can't result in solos. You can't, yeah. That's against the rules of this game that we invented, the greatest mistake game.
But the main thing is just, I mean, it's easy to get really wrapped up in a game, and if you're going to do something, you want to give it your all kind of thing. But for me, sometimes I get so involved that just get a little too excited and take things a little too personally or get a little too aggressive with my comebacks. And so as far as not just keeping in mind that it is just a game, it's probably the worst thing I've done that I try not to do anymore.
Sure, sure.
Wow. I think we've all done that.
It's definitely. It's just a game?
This
is breaking news. This is right buried at the end of an episode here.
For all you guys out there, apparently it's just a game, and Eric and I spend hours recording podcasts for apparently just a game.
Yeah, that is kind of lame.
Exactly. Don't forget it.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything you want to put? Do you want to plug any of what you're working on, or just tell people to come on down to Web to Play? Tell people how to do that if they don't know, just in case.
Well, just let's see the address. If you just put in Web Diplomacy and Google it, you'll find the site and. Definitely log on. My name on Web Diplomacy is Mad Mark, so you can just send me a personal message straight to my account, and I'll hook you up with some good games.
Perfect.
Excellent. Thanks a lot, Mark, for spending some time with us. I know it's end of day, and we're all busy, so we really appreciate it.
Yep.
No problem. It was a pleasure, and if you need to chat again, let me know.
Okay.
You might be knocking. All right. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Yeah. Bye.
That was episode 12 of Diplomacy Cast. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Oh, my God, I can't believe we're at 12. An even dozen. I can't wait for the Baker's Dozen.